Hey folks, it's the Shay Anything Podcast. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino for the first time in 3 weeks. And in between us is John Hine.
This is a big get.
I'm very happy to be here, guys. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, so the reason you're on...
We're thrilled.
Going back, we are thrilled. Going back a couple weeks, or maybe even months.
It was a while.
Andy really went after you.
Oh, are you going to spring something on me? That's too bad, because I was going to say something really nice about you. But
I'm not springing anything on you.
I don't have anything. I don't have the audio queued up. I don't have anything. But do you remember that? You said, basically, John Hine comes in from the Stern Show into Baseball Night in New York and just thinks he knows everything.
You know what I remember about that?
Doesn't.
Is that I was good. I was funny. I was on point. And we came out of the newsroom, and Doug was like, "That was a little harsh. I think we should cut that at little guys." And John was like, "Why? I don't care." He understands the fake pro wrestling nature of on-air rivalries.
Look, I take everything you say, Andy, with a grain of salt, regardless of what you're talking about. As a fan of the podcast, and I've come in and told Doug, I've complimented him at times, I've been critical at times.
Which I know is hard for you to do.
It is tough. But I do enjoy listening to you guys. And so imagine me on the W train on the way down here listening to the latest Shay Anything episode, and Andy Martino, out of nowhere, completely unprovoked,
it was a drive-by.
Takes great umbrage in the old, "Oh, who's this bozo who thinks he knows sports when all he does is work on the Stern Show?" And I was like, all right, at least I know where I stand. That's kind of cool.
Wait a minute. So the mischaracterization there, first of all, I walked right out of here and gave you a heads up, because that's what people do behind the scenes of these things.
Yes, you did.
So there's no this is nonsense that you were surprised.
What do you mean? I was on the train.
Thing.
I didn't get the heads up, but I was on the train.
No, you were sitting here in the newsroom. We came out of this studio. We walked out of the door, and I said, "Hey, John, I just talked about you. Do you want to listen to it before it airs to make sure it's cool?" And Doug was like, "I
don't know. First of all, I don't know why Andy keeps using that voice.
That's how you talk.
If I had the reason impression. That I did go up to Andy and say we should probably take it easy." Or something like that, was because a lot of people ask me, and we've had this conversation, us three before, do you guys really hate each other?
That's more about you two, though, right?
I always think about
it. You're a part of it.
You are a part of it, yeah. And I always think to myself, I wonder, is it worth it that we keep doing this? Because people might actually think we get off the set and like don't talk to each other, and it's the Studio 41's just ballooning with ego, and we all like, it's so not the case. But I just get worried that we put off this vibe that we actually genuinely hate each other, which is a compliment to us.
It's one of those things where you're like brothers or whatever else, and the more you pick on each other, the more you care for each other.
Interesting.
That's how I look at it. Like, if I couldn't, at the end of every loudmouth, if I couldn't make a joke about Doug because he was too sensitive about it, then I wouldn't. I'd respect that. But no, I would do it anyway.
That's the thing. There are people who I've worked with, or maybe even who I work with, that I know to never sing anything negative about on the air, because there'd be drama.
Right.
And obviously the people who we're sitting here with, like, you can say you can say anything you want about me, as long as it's not, like, you know, true and hurtful. That's the trick, is, like, you're the opposite of what I accused you of. You prepare for the show. If I said something real, that would be one thing. But can I change the subject for a second before we get to baseball? Because, like, you probably know what this is going to be about. But this is a intense thrill for me to be sitting next to somebody who was literally next to Paul McCartney like 2 hours ago. So this is like...
You know, Andy's a little bit of a Beatles fan.
I knew that.
I got to pick your brain about this for a second. And okay. I saved it for the show on purpose, because I know anecdotally we have people out there listening who are also Beatles fans. So John, just to get the background, I'm driving to the gym early this morning. I turn on the car. Paul McCartney's on Howard Stern, which is always a great long-form interview.
Yes.
There's like a whole history of Howard and Paul that I've heard a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I just got all tingly, and I kind of wanted to like faint or pee myself or something, because I was like...
You wanted to?
Well, like, it was some kind of release was going to happen. So I was hoping it was those things, because I knew that John, someone I know and was going to see later that day, was near Paul.
Yes.
I'm a girl at Shea Stadium in 1965 screaming my head off. Like, that's where I'm at emotionally. So can you just tell me a little bit about what Paul was like today? Just like, give me something.
No.
Please.
All right.
What if John's like, he's a total a-hole?
That'd be fine.
All right.
I'm sure that's not true. I know enough about him.
I would be honest about that and say if that was the case. Paul McCartney, he's one of the most down-to-earth, easygoing. He's like, hey, it's Paul. How you know, hey, how you doing? Like he's very, that was my killer Paul
that
McCartney.
That was not bad.
There. Better than Andy's Doug.
But he's everything you'd want him to be.
Yeah.
And during the interview, and I'll, you know, of course, I'll plug it.
Careful,
it's serious.
There may be a release coming if you keep talking about it like this. I'm warning you.
Understood. But
Andy is next to you.
It was True. I mean, Howard and Paul, it's like they're old buddies. And you heard the interview.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
if you're a Beatles fan, you have to listen to this because they just go through everything. My point being, I understand how you feel because I'm the same way about the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time McCartney came up, it's just like, oh, my God, I'm standing.
It's the only real starstruck I would get, him or Ringo, in the world.
But here's the thing. That's happened to me here. Maybe not at the same level.
When you saw Doug for the first time?
Well, yeah, the first time I met Doug Williams, I couldn't speak. But when we did BNNY and we had that Davy Johnson show, which I think should go down in infamy.
There will be a 30 for 30 one day on that.
Yeah.
Okay, but I'm like, this is Davy Johnson. To me, again, being a outsider, as Andy characterizes me to the sports world, to sit down next to Davy Johnson and have him tell me that I picked the Red Sox when I didn't pick the Red Sox to win the World Series, although
weird,
I look really smart right now, that to me was one of the greatest moments because I look at him, I'm like, this isn't Andy or Doug or, this is Davy Johnson. And so I do get caught up in that, but at the Stern Show and even here, like you're a pro, you got to do your job.
Totally.
And that's what you do.
But with Paul bleeping McCartney, it's so next level. Like, so you walk by him in the hall today, right?
A couple times, yeah.
And you don't, do you say hello? Do you get nervous? Do you get tingly? Do you just, is it like, hey, this is like I'm walking by Eamon McEnany at SNY.
Because Eamon and Paul share a lot of similarities. No, it's like, he's not there to see me. He's there to see Howard, and I get that. Yes, to be in the proximity, am I tempted to be like, oh my God, I love this. You're the best left-handed baseball player I've ever. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's rolling around my head.
Like Chris Farley.
Chris Farley interview. You were a Beatle, but I just walk by and smile and give the old handshake and we moved on.
For anybody who's just listening, there's actually a pool of urine underneath Andy's
That's
seat.
That's right. The first step, urine and tears.
I figured we were going to go with the segue that Paul played Citi Field, and that's why we're talking about this in the shade.
We don't need to do it.
No, we don't do fancy things like that.
We keep it real here. We don't do tie-ins.
No,
we'll move on to baseball in a moment. I just want to hear this.
It is incredible being in the same room as someone who is truly a living legend. Like, again, you got Howard, who's right there. You've got McCartney, who is, top five living famous people right now, I think, of all time. Amazingly talented. And, and I'm sitting out there. The three of us being in the same area is pretty impressive.
I think this might be the closest I've ever been to a Beatle right now, even though it's... Can I touch you?
No.
Please.
That's kind of creepy.
The first time I ever saw Paul, and we're going to move on as soon as I tell this story.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are. I was at... baseball tie-in. I'm an MLB insider. I was at Yankee Stadium in 2011 where Paul McCartney was playing. And I was obviously excited. I hadn't seen him yet. He comes out. I'm with my wife. He comes out. He waves at the beginning of the show. And then he just starts playing Hello, Goodbye. I didn't know how I was going to react. And according to my wife, I froze, like my arms locked. I kept looking at Paul, looking at her, looking at Paul, looking at her. And then I just, while still kind of a bodily frozen, just started weeping, like tears running down my face. So that's where I'm at. That's why I haven't been able to talk Mets yet at the 10-minute mark that we're at.
I just love how you're looking at me as I'm an extension of the Beatles.
You
I'm
are
kind
now.
Of enjoying
you're
this.
You're the fifth Beatle.
There's something in Andy's eyes today that I've never seen.
I've never seen this glee.
And a lot of talk already in this show, whether indirectly or directly, about bodily fluids, which normally doesn't come up. But
I love baseball, too.
Every once in a while it comes up.
Don't get me wrong. Get excited about that, too.
I am going to segue into baseball.
Please
if
do.
I could.
Okay, it's the right part.
So where do we stand with the Mets? I texted you two earlier today. I got a very interesting response from Andy, which I won't say on the show. It was an autocorrect.
I was in my Paul excitement.
Right. about how a couple of people were tweeting. You tweeted about this last night, about the Mets' record since the start of August, since the start of July. They're both good. They're both over 500. And what I find interesting is we do a lot of talking right now about the Yankees because they're in the playoff hunt. We don't really talk about the Mets on the day-to-day. So should Mets fans be able to gather, Andy, any optimism or hope, more hope than they had when the things were really bad in June than they have now with how this team has been?
Well, I tweeted before the conclusion of the games last night. What I noticed was that they were both 18 and 15 since August 1st, yeah. Identical records. And I wasn't, it wasn't a troll, it was maybe taken as a troll job, but like by some were like, yeah, but the Yankees, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I actually like had the same impulse that you're having right now. Was that, oh, this is interesting. The Mets have, it came, I probably, the reason I looked it up is because I was like, you know what? The Mets haven't been embarrassing themselves lately to the same extent. No. So I was like, let's look at how long that's been going on for. And I was flipping between the two games, so then I thought to compare. And I thought it was interesting to see that, okay, now that they've got something kind of straightened out a little bit, what does that tell? The same exact thing thought that you had, Doug, when you sent that text to play on the podcast here was, like, what does this tell us about the Mets next year? And, you know, my opinion has always been that they should not blow up the roster. And like any good thinker who is constantly in search of supporting evidence for my pre-existing opinions, I find that the, I find, isn't that how you're supposed to develop
thoughts? Yeah, that's exactly how you
that's
do it.
That's how research works.
Right. I find that my hypothesis is supported by the fact that it's sort of come together a little bit, and I think that they should continue to take a run at it with the same basic framework of a team that they have until, while they've got that pitching under control.
So. Yeah, kind of how this podcast has worked for the last couple of months, especially with the trade deadline, was I was kind of rooting for blow up the status quo, trade some starters, see what you can get. Andy, from the beginning, has said the Mets are weirdly bad for who's on their team. Keep everything together because you already have this structure in place. Move forward, John. So the fact that it now, especially given how everybody's pitched their last time out, Mats, Wheeler, Syndergaard, DeGrom, they're all pitching great right now. So Andy's point of view to keep this intact moving forward in 2018 is working right now. All you can hope for is that these guys finally have clicked together, even though you only have one more year of the four of them pitching together.
I think you got to look at the circumstances, though, right now. And look, I'm going to use some of my Pittsburgh Pirate fandom. Mm-hmm. Yes, everyone listening.
You're a Red Sox fan, I thought.
No, I'm a Pittsburgh Pirate fan. I picked the Red Sox to win the World Series, though.
According to Davey Johnson.
When you root for a team like the Pirates, you know usually by June or July your season's done. So you need to spend the next 3 months hoping that they're building for the future, playing young kids, looking at guys and seeing how they're doing. So even though the wins and losses technically really don't matter, it's all that momentum going into the next season. So a few years ago when the Pirates were actually good for a couple years, you saw it coming. Like you saw McCutcheon on the rise. You saw the deals there, like the A.J. Burnett deal. Like different things that, you know what, this could work. And you got that feeling. Going into this season, I wasn't as high on the Mets as other people were. I thought they would have a winning record, but I didn't think they were going to win the division. I thought the Nationals were going to win the division, to show what I know. But it was the big pitching if. It's if all these guys could stay healthy and if they could pitch to their best abilities, they're going to be fine.
Well, back-to-back seasons where that's been the if.
Right.
And it hasn't worked.
And it hasn't worked. So I, like you, Doug, was a, you got to blow this thing up. You got to trade Syndergaard. You got to trade DeGrom. We're talking All-Star break now.
Right.
And get some new blood in here, new talent, mix things up a little bit. I was a huge advocate of trading Wheeler because I thought, sell high on Wheeler. This is as good as he's going to get. Mm. Well, I was wrong about Wheeler. He's maintained that and been fantastic. Syndergaard, you know, has got the goods and will come around eventually. DeGrom, arguably the best pitcher in baseball right now. Well, of course, we've left Jason Vargas out of this discussion. I can't even believe that.
Last night kind of tainted how good you felt.
But when you have that starting pitching core, I look at the Mets and just say there's too much talent for this team to be playing as they were before this last month or so. There's just too much left out there on the field. But I still honestly worry about, I'm not worried about the pitching staff. Injuries are going to happen. You need a little more depth. They're going to come and go. I'm much more concerned about the other eight guys on the field. One, the youth, are they going to deliver as promised, a la Rosario at short, who's supposed to be one of the best players in baseball? He's not. A la Adam Smith, who has been a disappointment. Nimmo, who has superseded any expectations. Conforto, who seems to be figuring things out. Those were are the ifs that I look at on this team, because if they can get solid production out of some of those guys, with a pitching staff that's going to hold the other team to less than 3 runs a game, you're going to win a lot of ball games. And so do I think they should trade one of the big guys and now bring in other youth? No, I don't. I think this, if it continues, is a good sign for next year, provided that they keep this pitching intact and healthy. And I think you can add here and there, maybe make a big trade, but I don't think it necessarily needs to be DeGrom or Syndergaard.
18 and 16 now after losing last night. has convinced you to change course on what you recommend.
It's not just the win-loss record. It's how they're playing. It's mm-hmm. like you get a better feel for this team that they know how to win games, that their starters are going to go out and they're going to give you six mm-hmm. solid innings. And then if you could shore up that bullpen a little bit, you're going to be all right. My bigger concern, again, are the bats. I mean, when this team does pitch well, like Jacob deGrom, case in point, where is the run support? That needs to be there. And if they can't figure out how the other eight can score more runs, yeah. then no, I think they're going to be a close to 500 team. But they're not far away from being better than
well,
that.
Well, so my conclusion yesterday was that at least the starting pitching is finally the four of these guys pitching well their last time out. Maybe you move forward with this. And John Harper was on Baseball Night in New York last night. He actually came together with a trade where he thought you could send Noah Syndergaard to the Brewers and get back Christian Yelich. There were a couple other players. Nimmo was in
that.
The trade going. Nimmo was going to Milwaukee. And one of their starting pitchers, Zach Davies, was coming back to the Mets.
Would you guys make that trade?
Well, yes. I haven't heard it till now, but yes, I think so.
On the surface, I was like, I'm not sure the Mets would do that because you're trading, you know, a good, fairly good young outfielder and Noah Syndergaard to get back Christian Yelich. The problem is Christian Yelich is a star, everyday young outfielder with 4 years of control.
Yeah.
But Andy,
I don't
remember
know if the
Brewers
would do that.
Yeah. So remember when John Rico made the comment, maybe you think outside the box. Is it thinking outside the box if you come to the conclusion that, okay, now that we have this potential surplus in the rotation, let's use it to get better elsewhere?
Well, look, I think that I'd be hesitant to do that. It depends on what, like, that would be a deal. If you can get Christian Yelich, I would usually take the position star position player over the star pitcher, as I think anyone would, because he plays every day versus once every 5 days. But I think, so, I mean, if a trade like that were to come along, sure. But generally speaking, I would be hesitant to trade from starting pitching, even one guy like DeGrom or Syndergaard, which I do think they'll strongly consider doing this offseason, trading one of those guys. I shouldn't say DeGrom, excuse me. Wheeler and Syndergaard, I think, are the two guys they'll strongly consider trading. DeGrom is a possibility, but less so. So as I've said before, they have something really special with his pitching. There's so many issues, and I don't want this to be interpreted as an overly positive take on the Mets and saying, oh, no, they're good, they're going to win the World Series next year. But there's so many other issues with the organization. Player development is an issue. Position players are an issue. All kinds of things that we all see. But they do have something that takes, like, the better part of a decade to bring together, which is strong starting pitching, a good rotation, and guys under control. So when people started going crazy with this idea of trading guys this year, I understand the logic, but I'm like, you don't do that once you have it, because you might never have it again. It might be another generation till you have this again. So I'm taking my shot with what I have, however flawed it may be. There's no rush to move any of these pitchers. You've got them all next year. You might as well just take a shot with these guys and see where it goes. You never know how things are going to work out. We never thought the Nationals would be bad this year. We never thought that the Phillies would be good. There's all kinds of things. The A's. I mean, baseball, there's so much parity and it's so unpredictable that you can be a thoroughly, deeply mediocre ball club and win a playoff spot or contend for one. So I think the Mets are going to be pretty mediocre next year, but I don't think that's mutually exclusive to contending. And I think the only way that you can contend is keeping that rotation together. Again, it's a special thing. What is the rush to break it up?
But this whole plea about keeping this road when Harvey was here, like, you can't break these guys up, right? They're young, they're at the top of their game, they're all under control, you got to keep the rotation together. We went to the World Series with it, we can do it again. It doesn't happen. I mean, it's very, very rare. Maybe the Braves with, you know, Maddox and Glavine and Smoltz were the last team mm-hmm. where they kept a rotation like that intact for a number of years, and then your Steve Avery came and went,
but
et
cetera. It's what they have, the Mets.
Oh, I understand it's that, right. but I would not make that trade because I still have more confidence, I think, in Noah Syndergaard than anybody else. I think Syndergaard can figure this out, can get healthy again, can take some of that muscle away that he put on and maybe go back to being that pitcher that he was, where there was no talk about Jacob deGrom. All the talk was about Noah Syndergaard winning the Cy Young.
Yeah, he started the wild card game.
I mean, Syndergaard, we know, can be a beast. And I don't think, as Andy's saying now, you give up on that talent. Not yet. I think, because whatever you're going to get back, even Christian Yelich with that trade that Harp proposes is not enough for me. I look at Michael Conforto, it's not Christian Yelich, but has the potential to be close to a Christian Yelich.
He's such a wild card, though. I mean,
Agreed.
Who is he?
And Syndergaard's a wild card, too. Yeah. I understand that.
He's been predominantly good.
But that's why, if you're going to break up the rotation, I still argue that Wheeler is the guy that you deal.
You could certainly make a case for that.
Because I think Wheeler, look, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a top-notch starter in the major leagues for a number of years. But to me, he's the biggest if. Well, Matt's is the biggest if. He's the second biggest
Matt's
if.
Matt's isn't an if.
And
Matt
that
is,
No.
Matt's is what he is.
Okay.
He's
inconsistent. But Wheeler right now, I could see teams looking at him as a number two or maybe even a number one and would be willing to give up. I don't know prospects. Adam Fisher could talk, or you could speak better to that, Andy. But maybe you get a everyday regular player and a real top 10 kind of prospect or someone at that level if you package Wheeler with somebody else. And then you're turning things around a little bit. You're still keeping DeGrom and Syndergaard and Mats and Vargas or whatever he is. So you still have some solid pitching intact. But as I said before, the position players is where the change needs to be made, I feel, not necessarily the rotation.
What I should have said, Andy, when Hart made that point was, is David Stearns going to be making that deal as the Mets GM to some new GM in Milwaukee?
So
before we continue with this conversation, you had Colin yesterday on SNY.TV.
Yeah. I hope it's not David Stearns.
What is the latest?
I think people get so, nothing against David Stearns, but people in media and inside the game get so attached to like hot names. Someone was making the point to me the other day, actually, as I was trying to report on the situation, is like, what does David Stearns, point to one thing David Stearns or Mike Chernoff or John Daniels does that John Ricco doesn't do? These are the same type of guy with the same type of skills, and it's just about the sexy other that sometimes people get excited about, which is a different topic. So your question to me was the small update that I reported, because it was September and I wanted to check in on, are you still going to be interviewing in September? And the answer that I got was maybe by the end of the month.
Because you've been saying all along that September.
Yeah. So I'm like, here we are.
Right.
When are the interviews? Yeah. And it's like they're very much in, and I've stopped kind of floating names out there too, because my understanding is they're very much in a preliminary phase of this. So you're going to hear these names, and people are going to get excited about X, Y, or Z name. And it's going to be like, yeah, there might be something to that, but probably it's all very preliminary. There's so much self-promotion going on right now. Most of what people read has to do with guys throwing their names out there or getting someone to write their name. It's all very strategic right now, so it's not very real yet. One thing concretely that I can say, that I can report in the article you referenced, I wrote it, that they're willing to do, which I've never been willing to do before, is this new sort of title inflation that happens in baseball, where you take a structure like the Red Sox or the Cubs, where you have Dave Dombrowski and Theo Epstein are essentially GMs, but they're presidents of baseball operations. And
is there a GM underneath them?
Yes, Jed Hoyer is the GM of the Cubs.
Do they actually have a GM role?
Yeah, Jed Hoyer is the general manager of the Cubs. Theo Epstein's the president of baseball operations.
Right, so but who's
making the decisions?
Yeah, who's making the final call?
Basically Theo Epstein.
Right.
So it's basically like Sandy Alderson and John Ricco all these years, but it's calling it something else, and that may seem silly, and it is sort of silly, but it's actually the way that it's the only way that you get permission to interview somebody who's currently a GM. Because if you're, let's say you want to talk to David Stearns, okay, and you're the Mets, the Brewers are going to say, no, he's a GM. You can't make a lateral move to the Mets.
Yeah.
But if you're going to say, we're going to make him the president of baseball, the Brewers will say, wow, we can't deny him the chance to have a promotion. It seriously works that way. Huh. The only chance where permission was denied was our friend Jim Duquette's cousin, Dan Duquette, who was offered an interview and had a strong chance to be the president of the Blue Jays. Well, he was the GM of the Orioles, and Peter Angelos, the Orioles owner, said, no, you can't interview for that. You're under contract as my GM. And that in the industry was like sacrilege. Like, how could Angelos limit Duquette? He got the chance to be a president, and you held him down. So basically, what I'm reporting is that they are interested in several current GMs. They want to be able to interview these guys.
And in order to do that.
Yeah, and so what they've always said, this question was asked of the Mets at the highest levels in 2010, would you consider a president-type position? And the answer was Saul Katz is the team president. So no, he is. Saul, that's his title. But now what's happened, so no, of course, Sandy Alderson's not going to be the team president. That's Saul's job. So what has happened now is you can have a team president like a Saul Katz who's not involved in baseball, and then you can have the president of baseball ops. Stupid? Yes.
Yes.
But real.
So if
sort of.
The Mets did arrive,
I mean, it's a factor in this.
If the Mets did arrive at a different conclusion than you have, which is we want David Stearns. Baseball, the headline would be, this guy has skyrocketed to another promotion and is suddenly the president of
Correct.
Baseball operations. Which is interesting because the dynamic you're describing is fairly similar to GM and assistant GM.
It's exactly.
It's just a little higher, but semantics.
John Rico was the general manager of the Mets over the last several years. Sandy Alderson was the president of baseball operations. John Rico was doing the daily grind of being a GM. But they didn't have those titles.
Right. So the roles are the same.
Yeah.
The titles are different.
And, of course, the roles depend on interpersonal dynamics. Like, Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein are old-time friends who started out in the Red Sox together, maybe even started in the Padres if Jed was in the Padres. Anyway, they've gone back a long time, and they collaborate. But Theo's the boss.
Right.
Even though Jed gets to say, I'm the World Series-winning GM of the Chicago Cubs. So, you know.
What do you want?
Touching on Andy's point, when you think about which executive is responsible for the Cubs winning the World Series, you're going to say Theo Epstein.
Of course.
I mean, with all due respect to Jed Hoyer, I mean, that's just the way it goes. What do I want? I mean, titles don't mean anything to me. They've never meant anything to me, nor should they in this situation. But I understand the dance that Andy's reporting.
And it might
here
mean
that you
look
do.
Across Major League Baseball and you see current GMs and they could be yours if you're a Met fan.
And that's why you play by this rule book.
Right.
It's like, guess what? Team, we're looking for a team president. If that means I could talk to 30 other GMs about the president job, if it opens the talent pool, then I'm all for that. And what do I want? I want someone who can come in here, work within the framework of the Mets, know this New York market and how, not just how the fans feel, but the whole dynamic of baseball here, and show that they can get it done in a creative sort of fashion. It doesn't mean open up the checkbook and start signing free agents left and right. That's, in my opinion, never the answer. It's the reverse. It's all about developing young talent and putting the pieces in place so you could build the farm system to the point where you can be like a Milwaukee right now, or say, the way St. Louis always is, or other teams, even the Red Sox, although their cupboard's a little bare now, where you have talent in the minors that you're willing to either A, put on your big league ball club, or B, trade to get somebody in there who can make your big league ball club a winner. And right now, as the Mets are, the cupboard is virtually bare down in the minor leagues. I know they're leaving Las Vegas for Syracuse, which I think is a good thing, at least in the AAA. But you got to definitely fill that cupboard up with solid prospects, as well as improving the major league club. And it sounds like a very basic thing, an easy
right.
thing to do. But you and I both know how many different hoops you need to jump to and how many different things you need to manage in order to make that work. But the third and most important thing that this president slash GM slash whatever you want to call him or her.
Grand
is
Poobah.
I like that. The Grand Wizard of the New York Mets.
Careful.
Well, what they have to do is make sure that you can work with the guys you have signed right now to maximize their value mm-hmm. and potential.
Yeah.
And that's going to mean some tough decisions, I think, with a Frazier, with a Cespedes, with Bruce, with other veterans who you got to know how healthy they're going to be. And if they aren't going to be very healthy, well, then what are you going to do with those dollars? If you're quote unquote stuck with them, how are you going to be smart about it? And I think a lot goes into that. Plus, you're dealing with a manager who's coming into his second season who had a really rocky road his first year. So I don't know if a new voice is going to come in here and say, hey, Callaway's a great guy. You know, he had a tough year, but we really believe in him. And he could, you know, the arms are looking good and we think he can do that. Or say, you know what? He's not my guy. This guy's my guy. And I need to come in here and know that I can bring manager X.
This is what the new person's going to come in. You have Omar Minaya as the right-hand man of Fred Wilpon and a major voice in baseball operations. You have John Rico, if he wants to stay, as your sort of details, rules guy and a person with major input. You may have J.P. Ricciardi, another big figure in the game, if he decides to stay, and you've got a manager. You want it? Because this is what it looks like. Are you going to take? That's how they basically have to present
it. But then I would ask that question to you. Which existing GM, if that's what you're going
to
go for,
is going to say
yes? Going to take that?
That's a great question. So I'll tell you this. I think that that's a good question, and there's a lot of reasons to be skeptical that they're going to be able to attract a top candidate to the job for reasons like that. Although, when you break that down, there's like no two better people, honestly, hardly in the whole game to work with in John Rico and Omar Minaya. Truly, these are like good people. Callaway is a challenging manager to have, but that's a different story. Not everyone may see it as terrible. These are two guys with a lot of relationships in the game. But the sheer volume of BS leaks with people planting their names in the media connected to this job allow me to extrapolate that there's interest.
Yeah.
And believe me, like, as a reporter, it's my job to try to speak to everyone who I report on, whether I'm quoting those people or not. And I can tell you that there's interest in the job from some. And there are people who have been connected to the job who are like, I don't know, I'm happy where I'm at. So it sort of depends on the individual and their situation. I think also these people are competitors and they like a challenge. One prominent person in the game, I'm not trying to be coy here, it was just a background conversation. One prominent person in the game who's been connected to this job said, well, look, I'm happy where I am. I love the front office I'm working in. He's not a GM right now. I love the front office I'm working in. I love the city I live in, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you always like a leadership challenge. You always like to say, like, I won in a big market. So I think a lot of these competitors will be intrigued by that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Doug, but I get there is the allure of being the guy in charge of the New York Mets. That's a big deal.
There's a challenge. I'm just not sure how high the upside is because you're not going to come in and win with your team. You know, if you're the GM of another team and you feel like you've got a team in place that you put together, are you really going to go to the Mets and inherit Jay Bruce, Todd Frazier, Jason Vargas, and Yoenis Cespedes' contract, not be able to sign a big-name contract this offseason, and you inherit pitching that is at its best but will be gone in a year or two? Mm-hmm. So I'm just not sure how high the upside is of taking that job.
Well, and these are the things that guys like that have to weigh, but there's egos involved in this too, where if you're you know, Joe Blow, the GM candidate, you're like, I can fix it. Just like we all have to have a little swagger in our things that we do, right? And I think that's the element of that. Like, Sandy Alderson came in when the Mets were about to completely crater. I know that he didn't know quite the extent of how bad it was going to get over the next couple of years when all this stuff hit. But for him, it was like he is a wealthy, high-status, semi-retired guy in the game. And they're like, you want to run the Mets? And he's like, yeah. Because I could do something. That's kind of how these guys think.
And getting back to what we were talking about before this part of the podcast, you're inheriting what could be the best pitching staff in the major leagues.
We've been saying that for so long.
But,
I agree. I'm full of optimism right now. It's just it's a big if always.
But I'm saying, look, if I'm a GM or whatever my role is currently, and I know how good I am and what I can do, and now I'm in a small market, but you know what? This is New York. And if I do this, and if I do it right, and I, you know, play well with Rico and Ricciardi and Minaya and whoever else they're going to keep, and I have Mickey Callaway there, but if I've got DeGrom and Syndergaard and Wheeler and Mats, and you know what? I've got, you know, Conforto looking better, and I can figure out Jay Bruce and make a couple moves here, a couple smaller acquisitions. Like, let's say Jason Vargas won 19 games this year instead of however many he's going to win, and I can get the right bullpen guy and turn this culture around, then to me, that is definitely worth the challenge. And the other thing I could say, if it doesn't work out, I could say, well, this is the system I was put into. I did the best I could. But Andy is so right. The ego is a powerful, powerful thing that's going to drive these guys and gals into the temptation of being the king of New York. Look at Brian Cashman. I mean, Brian Cashman going into that, I mean, with Steinbrenner, with all, not the Brian Cashman now, but the Brian Cashman a couple decades back. Who's walking into that job where, you know, you're going to get fired tomorrow? Like, you remember all the criticism of the Yankees back in the day. And he has managed to carve a pretty nice niche. Niche?
What's his title?
I think it could go either way. You know, that's an interesting question. I hear what you're saying, John, and you make a good point. And Cashman's a guy who, and they all look at themselves and probably say, I'm good. If I had that stage, I can be a Cashman. So you're right. Cashman's title, Doug, is GM. And he's a guy who's actually, whether there's some traditionalism there, some of his own sense of self-esteem there, where he's lost a guy like when Billy Epler went to the Angels, who was his assistant, who was a really valued guy, went to the Angels to be the GM. Cashman might have been able to say, you know what, why don't you be the GM of the Yankees? I'll kick myself upstairs. Don't do it that way. And now Tim Nehring's kind of the guy. We'll see. He's someone who could get some GM interest, perhaps. over the next couple years, so maybe they'll be faced with that again. But Cashman stayed the GM. He came into the game in a very different time, so maybe he's just not like, this trend is pretty recent, and he's not part of that generation. Maybe that's that. I haven't asked him directly, but it's a good question, and he's the GM.
All right, well, we got to wrap it up. We were going to talk Jacob DeGrom. He's really good. That's the conversation, I think.
Yeah, that's what I came on to say here, that yeah. Jacob DeGrom is an excellent starting pitcher.
He really is.
That's why we have you on.
And, hey, wins-loss record is just one of many things that should be considered when it comes to the Cy Young Award.
Have you thought about whether or not, if either of you guys thought about whether or not DeGrom's low win total would impact his Cy Young candidacy?
Oh, that's man. A great point. I didn't even consider that.
How would the voters, like, just that topic? Have we... Oh, looks, we are out of time.
We are out of time. That's a fresh topic for the next show. We do My Saturday Night. What'd you do on Saturday night?
My Saturday night, it was Labor Day weekend.
Right.
So for me, too.
Yes, for all of us. And actually, something recently happened in the Hine home. I live in Manhattan now. I moved in about a year and a half or so. And this is before my Saturday night. I actually got rid of the last car I owned. So I now do not own a moving vehicle, which is the first for me since I was 17 years old. Mm-hmm. And we got invited to a barbecue, some old friends out in Long Island where I used to live. So I was like, okay, let's go. Thinking I'd just go downstairs, jump in the car, and drive out there.
You forgot
and
you didn't have a car?
So I remembered I had a car. And here are my options. Zipcar, which is ridiculously expensive. Yeah. I apologize to Zipcar if they're a sponsor of this podcast.
They should apologize to you.
Uber / Lyft, whatever, another ridiculously expensive option.
Possible sponsorships, by the way, just going
Labor Day weekend.
Don't say anything about DraftKings. That's big right now.
Or
Casper mattresses.
But allow me to plug the MTA because we took the subway down to Penn Station.
They have no interest.
Took the Long Island Railroad out there and had some friends pick us up. But after the barbecue, it's like 11 o'clock or so at night, and I'm thinking, okay, just jump in the car and drive back. Nope. Back to the good old Long Island Railroad, hit Penn Station, took
Chris
the subway
Long
back,
Island Railroad.
Which makes my wife and I think, true Manhattanites. So we had our first Saturday night where we felt like we actually live in this town.
That's a nice story.
Thank you.
And you tied a nice bow around it at the
end.
That's
nice.
What I do.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I had a cool Saturday night. I as you know, I was in Las Vegas for the later part of last week interviewing David Wright. So since I had a very lucky timing, my younger sister had a baby. Clementine Rosemary is her name. Thank you. My first like biological niece or nephew. So it was a big deal. And my sister lives in Portland, Oregon. So I was really nervous as to when I was going to be able to meet this baby. But since I was already most of the way west, I was like, you know what? After talking to David Wright, I'm just going to go spend my Labor Day weekend in Portland, Oregon. So I went, I met the baby, which is a surprisingly profound experience when it's not my child. Babies are pretty disposable unless they're yours, right? It's just like, okay, you look like a baby, you know.
Disposable
wouldn't be the adjective I'd use.
I would. It's like, whatever. You know, my baby's special. The rest of your baby's whatever. So what I was surprised was
you
when
felt a connection.
I felt a real connection. It was very moving. See my sister so happy. It was great. And the other cool thing about it was that since they have a baby, on Saturday night, it was like, we had dinner. It was like 7. I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to leave you guys to your baby-filled night. And I just went out in the town by myself in Portland, Oregon. I mean, they could live anywhere. They happen to live in a cool place. I saw live music.
Portland's a great town.
I had, like, the Portland craft beer. I did things that are legal there and not legal to speak about in New York State.
And how good did it feel knowing that that baby you had zero responsibility for?
Oh, my God.
You knew that your sister had the baby, and it was just Uncle Andy out on the town in Portland.
That grind, there's no more special time in life probably than that 3 or 4 weeks where you have a newborn and you're so locked into it. But let me tell you, what's even better is to see someone who's like that walk out of the house and go get a little buzzed and watch some live music. Now, that's a Saturday night.
I had a beach barbecue in Sagaponack, New York on Long Island. It was beautiful. And had a nice Saturday night.
How'd you get out there? Did you take the train?
I drove.
Oh!
Because I actually
just got a car.
Congratulations.
So, I should have hit you up for a ride then.
Yeah, that's true. Anytime,
had I known that.
Anytime, John.
Oh, thank you.
You know where he drove his car to?
Where?
The BNNY barbecue.
I did.
Oh, I didn't make it out.
No, you didn't. Anyway.
That's a whole other podcast.
This has been the Shay Anything podcast. John Hine, thank you for coming on,
my friend. You for having me.
This was
both of you guys.
SNY.tv/Shay Anything. If you want to Shay Hey to us, leave us a voicemail and let us know how you're feeling, what you're thinking about. Shay Anything in your iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you could. Thanks for listening.
Can I host this?
No.